Like a lot of families, mine celebrated our cultural and ethnic heritage in different ways. My mother lovingly made the traditional Hungarian and Slovakian foods her mother had cooked. No Christmas for us was complete without poppy seed stollen and cabbage rolls with sour cream. No family birthday conceivable without chicken paprikash and homemade galushkis. My dad is Austrian, and we would go to the Baltimore Oktoberfest every single year, where I'd see members of my extended family dancing in lederhosen and dirndl dresses, selling beer, selling food. And when I was 6 years old, I even got to ride on top of the beer barrel that they parade around the hall, symbol of fertility. Yeah, that was me. Yep. And I threw a fit the next year when they told me I was too big to do it again. But from the time that they adopted me, my parents felt it was important to try and help me connect with my biological ethnicity. And I suppose the easiest way for them to do that was to plug me into St. Patrick's Day, all things St. Patrick's Day. And now I am always here for anything that includes cabbage. It is the comfort food of all of my people. And as a musician, I loved the Irish fiddle music that we would play on my dad's stereo. But it wasn't until years later that I learned the true legacy of the saint whose feast day provides an excuse for dyeing beer green and celebrating all things Irish. Born at the end of Roman rule in Britain, probably Scotland, he was kidnapped at age 16 by Irish pirates and taken to Ireland as a slave. He worked as a shepherd for about 6 years until he was able to escape back to Britain, and it wasn't long after that when he became a priest. And he wrote about seeing visions and hearing the voice of God. Whatever happened, he wound up dedicating his life to bringing Christianity to Ireland. He did establish several monasteries and convents populated largely by women and unfree people, likely quite relieved for the protection the church offered them from their former lives. But Patrick also destroyed ancient sacred sites, forced people to be baptized on pain of death, and was the first in a long line of Christian clerics hell-bent on stamping out indigenous Irish religion. Not a good look. I can see why the Catholic Church would have lifted him up as a saint, especially back then, but he hardly seems like someone I want to celebrate today. Old habits die hard, I guess. Catholic and Orthodox churches have a narrow definition of what a saint is. Jeffrey helpfully pointed out to me before today's service, after looking through the liturgy, that the saints in the Catholic and Orthodox traditions are actually anyone who's considered to be in heaven. Canonized saints are people the church feels it can guarantee are in heaven. It sounds a little silly even saying that out loud, but I don't know. I guess as a universalist, it shouldn't. Anyway, while Unitarian Universalists do not canonize people as saints, there are certainly people throughout our faith who have been lifted up as heroes and saints in a traditional sense, or a general sense. And as incredible as their contributions were, most of them caused some harm too. Ralph Waldo Emerson is a great example. The Sage of Concord was central to the Transcendentalist movement. He was known as one of the most liberal democratic thinkers of his time. And you use love to love Emerson, don't we? We just love to love that guy. And yet, in truth, he left Unitarianism, frustrated by what he felt was a worship of past tradition. But it's his views on race that really call his hero status into question for me. It's well known that Emerson opposed slavery. He was in favor of abolition, but he lacked the courage to vocally advocate for it. And he actually wrote about that and wrote about how embarrassed he was about that. He also wrote about his belief in the hierarchical nature of humanity. And wouldn't you know it, the English Saxons of whom he was one were at the pinnacle. They were the top for him. And religious heroes aren't the only ones falling from public grace these days. Author, historian, and public theologian Diana Butler Bass tells a story from a few years ago when she was speaking at a church in Richmond, Virginia. Monument Avenue in Richmond is mentioned in the story, and if you know it, it's a road known for Confederate Army leader memorials, several of which had begun to be removed at the time of this story. And the pastor of this church, a religious leader who agreed with their removal, asked her, "Have you driven down Monument Avenue yet?" "No," I replied. "I haven't been there," Diana writes. "It is stark, emotionally powerful in a different way than it used to be." He said, "You look down the road and all the statues are gone. There are empty altars everywhere." Empty altars everywhere. Yes, indeed, there are empty altars everywhere. This image of empty pedestals where statues once stood, empty altars where saints were once venerated, captures an important piece of the present era, I think. Thanks to movements like Me Too and the Truth Telling Project and Black Lives Matter, supposed saints and heroes are being reconsidered through a critical eye. And some of those figures are being literally and figuratively knocked off their pedestals all over the place. In many cases, this is a good thing. It's important for long-suppressed truths to be acknowledged. But I wonder, who are we putting up in their place? Given such harmful history, some might argue that we shouldn't put anyone up on a pedestal at all. No saints, no heroes, forget about it. Unitarians in particular have a strong iconoclast heritage, so if the image of empty pedestals and altars appeals to you, know that you are in good company. But like anything else, iconoclasty brings its own dangers. After all, how many books and sacred sites and works of art might still exist today had Patrick and other saints not destroyed them? We live in a cynical age. My generation was disillusioned after 9/11 and the 2008 housing market crisis. Generation Z just watched the nation's leaders place profit and political power over people's lives during the pandemic. It should be no surprise that trust in institutions, trust in people and leaders across the board is at an all-time low. But the problem isn't just that people and institutions mess up, fail to live up to our expectations. Part of the problem is that we ever expected them not to. The thing about the cynical age we live in is that it doesn't just shape the way that we think about other people. It also shapes the way we think about ourselves. Because none of us is perfect either, are we? We all have shadow sides, secrets, ways we don't measure up. Do our mistakes cancel out the good we've done in our lives? Is it really fair for the measure of a person's life to be the worst thing they've ever written or done? As a universalist, I certainly hope not. One of the most universal things about humans in nearly all times and all places is our tendency to identify heroes, people to look up to and imitate. As Diana Butler Bass reminded her blog readers, this is just basic human psychology. From the time we're babies, we learn through imitation. Perfect people, perfect institutions, perfect heroes do not exist. No human or human-made institution can be without fault. No person or organization will behave or operate or hold beliefs, all of which will wind up on the right side of history. All anyone can do is our best. But this doesn't mean we should have to give up on heroes. So in this era of empty altars, let us be grateful for the telling of long-suppressed truths. Let us also remember that even the best things humanity has ever done have been accomplished by imperfect people. Let us choose saints and heroes, imperfect as they may be. But let us choose our heroes and saints carefully. For as this quote attributed to our own imperfect Unitarian Saint Emerson reads, "A person will worship something. Have no doubt about that. We may think our tribute is paid in secret in the dark recesses of our hearts, but it will come out. That which dominates our imaginations and our thoughts will determine our lives and our character. Therefore, it behooves us to be careful what we worship, for what we are worshiping, we are becoming."